Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamini Namaste Sasvati Devi Gauravani Pacharini Nivasesa Sanivani Paskatyade Satani. Usually in the evening time we read from a work called Vrindavan Mahimamrita. But today I will only introduce a meditation from this work to you. Not that we meditate, but we will just hear the text and get an understanding of the Braj Bhakti. There are many meditations in this work, Vrindavan Mahimamrita, but they all follow one common line, one thread that you can recognize. It starts like this. Turn your attention away from the world of illusion and think about a bright light in which all these illusions don't exist. Then think or meditate about, now already we are challenged, a shining darkness. It must be spiritual, because these are opposing things that don't make sense in a material side. So think about a shining, love-filled darkness. And then see how behind that is a beautiful forest, the forest of Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan, see the birds, and it describes the trees and the creepers and the flowers and the cuckoos and the swans on the lakes. It's a huge, it's a paradisical description. And in that Vrindavan forest, see a golden effulgence and a bluish effulgence coming together, and this is Radha and Krishna. So this is the meditation. We are really encouraged in the meditation, which brings us to Vrindavan, to go away from this world, to go into a bright light, and then to look behind it and enter an indescribable ocean of love. That's the idea. So what happens there is described also in beautiful words. Throughout the day, a practitioner goes into various scenes of that transcendental realm. There's one thing that happens, one scene which happens from 8:25 to 10:48. In that period here on this earth, those who meditate about Radha and Krishna go into the beautiful Krishna reality. And we will read today about what happens then. There's a great assembly hall suitable for entertainment. All the residents of Vrindavan fill this assembly hall of Nanda Maharaj. They want to witness a wide variety of entertainment. That's at least what they say, but there's something in their mind which they don't say. What is that entertainment? Well, minstrels, so was wie in Deutsch Minnesänger, put the Leelas of Rama and Krishna to music. Poets recite their amazing poet songs. Like one poet will say, I hope this evening I will not sing to the deaf. Scholars lecture on the Puranas, and then there are dancers, jugglers, clowns and magicians who all perform for the pleasure of the Raja, the king. So, ostensibly, from the outside, that's why people go there. But the underlying motivation of all the performers, plus the entire audience, is to have the darshan of Ram and Krishna. But as far as Nanda, the king, knows, Ram is resting and Krishna is also resting. They are not coming to the assembly hall this evening. Nanda feels the growing anticipation of the assembly. And he looks to his wife, Yashoda, and sees she's concerned. She thinks her sons need to rest after yet another very busy day. So there are all these people. They have not really come to see the magicians do their magic or to hear their scholar debate. They want to see Krishna. But Yashoda feels Krishna should rest. So Nanda feels the growing anticipation of the assembly, as well as Yashoda's contrasting concern. So he's perplexed how to proceed. However, without anyone knowing it, the friends have dressed Ram and Krishna in a royal dress. When he is out in the forest, he is, you know, in forest dress. But now he's in a king's dress. And then, suddenly, Ram and Krishna burst onto the scene. And go to the raised platform which is reserved for them. At that moment, all the eyes of the audience turn towards Krishna. And here is a beautiful verse from the Govinda Lilamrita. I must say, you will hear here an analogy about a chakora bird. In mythology, that's a bird who eats, again it's a mythology, who lives on the moonbeams. He doesn't drink water, he doesn't eat pomegranate seeds, he looks in the moon and licks the moonbeams and gets his energy. It's almost a little like we know two Chinese Qigong masters who live on prana. They don't eat, they live in bird and they're friends. Ying and Ping is their name, really Chinese though. So okay, so you know what is a chakora bird, right? So the guests' hearts swell like the ocean as the moon-like hari rises in their vision. It said that the moon brings the ocean to flood. Their chakora-like eyes feel delight in the sight of this Hari moon. Their hair stand on end like herbs, Kräuter, nourished by the moonlight of Krishna. And in its soothing light, the lilies of their smiles unfurl like blooming lotuses at night. No? Imagine the moon comes and there are the closed lotuses, but when the soft rays of the moonlight touches these closed lotuses, they are opening. So in the same way, those who see Krishna, their hearts may have been not so open before, or they may not have smiled, but the moment they see him, they break out in the most beautiful smile. That's why he's called the festival for the eyes. So there is one great poet, his name is Raishika, who in his Antadarshan, that is his, you know, you can take darshan by looking out and seeing the deities, and Antadarshan means to look inside and see in the heart Krishna Balaram. And he sees there in the heart Krishna wearing a red and gold bandana around his head. Do you know what is, I don't know what is a bandana. Something like this, like a cloth. So he sees Krishna having this red and gold around his head, and his forehead is decorated with cooling sandalwood paste. Captivating earrings adorn his ears. A pearl hangs from his nose. It is described this pearl moves a little bit with the breath of Krishna. And there is a reddish shine on the surface of the pearl because it reflects the inner of Krishna's nostrils. There's a jewel necklace from his neck, and on his chest hangs a locket appropriate for this particular social occasion. There's a dashing sash around his waist which holds a dagger. Ein Dolch. Why a dagger? Well, the king or the prince will have a dagger out of compassion for his citizens whom he is ready to protect if they should ever be attacked in some way. So it's a symbolic thing. It's not meant to be used, but it is showing the readiness to protect those. So Krishna also has this. So he holds Balaram's hand as he enters the assembly. Now what does Krishna do when he enters? We heard he's bursting into the assembly. He's always very jubilant. But what does he do? This is important because then those sadhus who will meditate about Krishna entering the assembly hall, they need something to meditate upon. So he folds his hands before the priests and the elders, showing them respect, like this. This is for the priests and the elders. But then he sees all the children there.
they are also there. They are up somehow or other. He looks compassionately upon those who are junior to himself. And he then goes to his intimate friends, sits amongst them, and talks very intimately and personally. Then Ram and Krishna are seated amongst their friends, but on an elevated platform with their friends. Krishna is seated in the center, with Sridham and Sudham on his left and Balaram on his right. Below and in front of Krishna and Balaram are the Namasakas, it's this particular group. Row after row of friends surround the cowherd princes, while servants bearing lamps light the night. All in all, the arena and its gathering of Nanda Maharaja's subjects puts the heavenly Amaravati hall of Indra and the denizens of heaven to shame. This is just a little bit. I will stop here, but I want to now bring a point to your kind attention. In Gaudiya Vaishnavism, we hear of the visions of realized saints, like this poet Rai Shikhar, or this text is mostly taken from Krishna Das Kaviraj, another highly realized writer. And we meditate about this, but then something happens that is, I believe, you can only say it, highly spiritual. Because the meditation is not on your own mental fantasies on Krishna, but you follow the thoughts of highly elevated people who have transcended their ego and the ego world, something very beautiful can happen. And that is that by the influence of the divine energy, the Krishna's mercy energy, these descriptions come to life. You see them alive. You see a reality that is totally overwhelming, and it is often very different from what the letters of the text have told you. You see behind the text, in other words, the text is like a window. You look at this window, see? And then as you look in this window, you see the three lamps here. And behind it, there is something else which you cannot see at the moment, but you would see it tomorrow when the sun is up. So you see through the window into something that lies beyond. In the same way, by the mercy of, or by the ingress, either das Einwirken, of the spiritual Shakti, your spiritual vision is opened and you see a totally delightful scene. That's why sometimes those who are meditating, they are found laughing and crying. And the people of this world don't know why, but those who are on this level can see, they have seen something to laugh about and to cry about.
So this is a, I want to go up till here and we'll end this now. This is something which some devotees do. As they chant, they envision these scenes as they are described in these ancient texts, and chup, it opens, the scene opens to them a little bit like the lotus flowers which are touched by the rays of the moon. Hare Krishna. Good. I will address all of those who are there on this recording. Try it out. Hare Krishna.